You're listening to The Warblers, a Birds Canada podcast. I'm Andrea Gress.
And I am Andres Jimenez.
Join us as we travel on common flight paths with our guests, gaining insights and inspiration from the world of birds and bird conservation in Canada. Today's episode is going to be all about bird-friendly cities. We hear about, you know, bird-friendly coffee and bird-friendly this and that, but cities is what we're going to get into today. We've got author Tim Beatley joining us. He wrote Bird-Friendly City and has all kinds of interesting insights into how cities can become more bird-friendly. And then following that, we're going to chat with Sarah Jordan McLaughlin, who is on the ground in Calgary, working to make the city a better place for birds.
Cities have historically formed on rivers and shorelines and harbors, places that facilitate commerce and transportation. But these are precisely the places that are essential habitat and migration corridors for birds. Jim Boner, executive director of the Audubon Society of Western Pennsylvania, told me, "Birds are still coming through urban areas because they were doing it before they were urban areas. Just because we've built a lot of buildings and suburbs around it, that doesn't change their migratory paths. So cities must play an important part in the future of birds. And as this book will explain, many cities are beginning to take aggressive steps to make room for birds."
Ooh, I like that. I like that a lot. It's really thought-provoking. What were you reading from, Andres?
I was reading from The Bird-Friendly City by Timothy Beatley, Creating Safe Urban Habitats.
Yeah, a lot of thought-provoking stuff there. Birds, bird-friendly cities, what does that even mean, right?
It's really interesting because he says that birds allow for all of us to be conservationists. Welcome to the podcast, Tim. Think you could start by telling us about your work?
Sure. So I teach here at the University of Virginia, and I teach in an urban and environmental planning department. So one of the big hats that I wear is a professor. So I have been teaching here more than 30 years, mostly in the area of environment, environmental planning, environmental policy, mostly having to do with cities. So my teaching and my research have for a long time had mostly to do with thinking about how we can better plan cities to protect the environment and to connect us to nature. So that's one hat, but connected to that is work we're doing around biophilic cities that we'll probably talk some more about today. We have this global network of cities called Biophilic Cities, 25 cities actually in this network. So there's a sort of an activist advocacy role that I play as well, you know, kind of more recent for me. But it's all interconnected around ideas related to nature and cities.
So basically, you've dedicated a lot of time into thinking about nature in cities.
Yeah, I have, on many different levels. You know, for me, like a lot of us who have an interest in environment, who love the environment or have a connection to nature, there's usually, you know, a longer personal story. And there certainly is for me. I grew up very much in a city, but also very much with lots of trees and nature around me and spending a lot of time outside. And actually, this is where, you know, my interest in birds developed as a young kid. And I had parents who were interested in this as well, and a mom who was frequently identifying birds. So I think for a lot of us, it goes back to childhood, right? And those things that have had a huge impact on us and who we are as adults. So there's a sort of academic and career pathway that one can describe, but there's also just a personal pathway for me that has all been about nature and nature being a big part of my life and a big part of what makes all of our lives, you know, so interesting and worth living.
I can't agree more. Like, I grew up in rural Saskatchewan, and that was such a big part of why I got into nature. And I think same for Andres with Costa Rica and snakes and reptiles and all the nature that he was surrounded with growing up, right? That's absolutely been part of how we've gotten into what we do. So could you tell us what caused you to write The Bird-Friendly City?
I've had this longstanding interest in nature and biodiversity, and actually, like Andreas, I had an early love affair with snakes.
Yes,
as well, and that could be the whole focus of our discussion. But it was everything, really, and so the idea of living with all of this other life around us in cities has been a big focus for a lot of what I do. So the idea of a biophilic city is really a city that makes space for other many other forms of life. It's a multi-species city. There's an ethical duty, I believe, to make room and to make space and to actively find ways to coexist. And so birds are a big part of that, obviously. Birds are that kind of nature that I think a lot of us don't necessarily, a lot of folks see birds, hear them. They maybe aren't thinking a lot about them, perhaps, but yet they are so important in creating the positive spaces around where we live. But yet it seemed to me that there wasn't enough attention being paid, particularly amongst architects and urban designers and developers and others, about birds. Part of the motivation here comes from teaching in a school of architecture for more than 30 years. And even though we know that glass buildings and glass facades and windows are a huge threat to birds, almost no attention to birds given in the education of architects. And so part of the motivation was, We need a book. We need to be talking explicitly about what it is that city planners, urban designers, architects, landscape architects ought to be doing on behalf of birds or for birds. And we ought to, you know, as we are increasingly an urbanized planet, more and more of us living in cities have to be a big part of the answer. And so thus the idea behind the book.
In your book, you use the term biophilic cities. You actually use this term as the title of your book. Can you please define for us what a biophilic city is?
Well, there's no simple definition, but building on the concept of biophilia, of course. So biophilia, the love of nature and living systems, living things, this terminology and idea that E.O. Wilson, Ed Wilson, really coined, at least in the way we think of it today, that we have this innate connection or this innate affiliation with nature. To be truly happy and healthy and to lead meaningful lives, we believe you've got to have nature around you. Nature is not something optional. It's absolutely essential to leading a happy, healthy life. And we have co-evolved with nature. It's not a big surprise that in the presence of nature, we are calmer. We're in a better mood. Our cognitive performance goes up. Evidence that we're more likely to be generous, more likely to think longer term. A lot of evidence about just, you know, how better human beings we are when we have nature all around us. So the idea of a city that loves nature is one that obviously has lots of nature, ideally. You know, we want to be immersed in nature in those cities. So we want to have parks and greenery and trees, and we want to be designing every building in a city so that it's got abundant nature in it, designed in it and around it. So green rooftops and living walls and sky parks and all these things that we're doing now as a sort of matter of standard building practice in many places contribute to this vision of a biophilic city. But what I started to say was that a biophilic city and a bird-friendly city is not just about the presence of nature or the presence of birds, but it's also about the perspective, the attitudes of the people who live in those cities. So that's a kind of key idea behind biophilia. It's engaging that nature, and it's caring about that nature. And so with respect to birds, that means actively watching, being curious, seeing those birds around us as fellow citizens in this biophilic city, in this bird-friendly city. In the book, there's a little bit of a discussion about how, you know, every school could be thought of as a bird habitat and designed as a bird habitat, and that we should be, you know, teaching kids from an early age to identify birds and learn about birds.
Tim, you've told us that a bird-friendly city is one that has a lot of nature around, and that a bird-friendly city is one that will make us better humans, that will make us feel better, and that is a clear reason of things we will gain by going to bird-friendly cities. And in your book, you use this term, birdicity. And I was wondering if you could tell us, what is a city on high birdicity, and can even give us an example of what you think is a city that is highly bird-friendly?
I don't necessarily want to create one more crazy word.
It's a fun word, though.
it's a fun, yeah, high birdicity. I don't know. It's just some kind of a measure, some kind of indicator, you know, metric for understanding how bird-friendly a city is, right? And not necessarily going to be quantitative or precise, but I do think There's a table or two or one primary table that sort of lists some things that would characterize a bird-friendly city. We do need some different metrics for judging the goodness of a city. We haven't, I think, done a very good job with this, but we've tended to emphasize economic metrics, right? It's mm-hmm. the GDP, it's, yep. you know, it's all of that. That's a very sort of narrow way of looking at cities. So in the book and in presentations, I'm often saying, well, why don't we judge the goodness of a city by its birdsong? So a city where every resident in every neighborhood is able to hear birdsong, native species, you know, birdsong is a wonderful kind of metric of, for me, of what a good city could be. And we can go from there and talk about what some other metrics might be, but I think we'd need to expand our vision of what a good city is or could be beyond just some of the typical economic metrics or measures that we tend to use.
You even see in your book, a city with no birdsong is not a city worth living in. And that's something very important. I feel that many cities are trying to attract talent. Many cities are trying to appear as a fantastic place to live so people will continue to live on them, right? Particularly after COVID. And I want to ask you for an example, because I think that idea is powerful. It's a powerful idea that birdsong and the measure of birdsong is what makes a city livable.
You ask an interesting question, Andres, about, you know, how do we sell cities or how do we market? You know, we want cities that will be attractive to business. That's often at least the Chamber of Commerce kind of perspective on cities. And it's true that the cities that tend to be the most attractive to corporations and companies, and I'm thinking, for example, of Tesla, just moving their headquarters to Austin, Texas. Well, Austin is a member in our Bioflex Cities network as a partner city, and they're embracing nature have for many, many years, and it's also a bird-friendly city as well, I would say. They're not doing it just because they want companies to locate there, but it's definitely true that the things that you do to make a city more natureful, more biophilic, more bird-friendly will also be just more attractive places to live. And more companies will realize that, you know, those are places where their employees, their staff want to live. This was the argument that Richard Daley, Mayor Daley of Chicago, made many years ago there in that city, and a city, you know, that started installing green rooftops and pocket parks and making themselves more bicycle friendly, doing a lot of things in part because they realized that that was good business.
Yeah, I always think of nice cities to live in as being places that are easy walks to natural areas, no matter where I am in the city. You know, if I'm working in a downtown office building and I want to pop somewhere for lunch, do I have a nice natural area within walking distance or not? You know, and I think that really plays into what I picture as a nice place to live. And of course, that goes hand in hand with the birds, right? If there's lots of natural areas, you're going to have a nice bird-friendly city.
Our vision of a biophilic city is one of immersive nature, right? It's this idea that we move from this model of a city or this vision of a city where we have a few parks here and there. We have a few places where there are trees and nature that we have to walk to visit or spend time in, to this more kind of embedded, you know, we're actually living in the park, we're living in the forest, nature's all around us. And there are no perfect examples of this, but some of our cities, like Singapore, city-state, come pretty close to that. So you're describing your office, you know, hopefully you'll have some nature around you in the spaces, in the interior spaces even of your work environment, but the ability to open a window and perhaps hear birds, see birds, feel a breeze. And as you walk out of that building, having all this nature all around you, the pathways, the walkways that you take to move maybe from your work to your home, you'll hear and see birds. And then, you know, it's all around you. You're immersed in it. And that's the vision that's sort of taking hold in a lot of our cities. And birds are a big part of that.
A bird-friendly city is not just a place that's implementing tools in new buildings to make buildings more friendly, but they're engaging the people, there's education, there's programs for individuals, and ultimately we're working towards that really diverse, natural city that we're living in. We're not so much living in a separate city from the birds, we're living with them in a natural environment.
Yes, very true. Well said.
We'll be right back. How do you like your coffee, Andrea? Cream? Sure?
I like mine bird-friendly, certified.
Then I have just the brew for you. Birds and Beans coffee roasters only use beans from farmers who keep the native forest habitat intact, growing coffee in the shade of a variety of native trees.
That's good for migratory birds.
Good for everyone. This coffee is even certified by the Smithsonian Migratory Bird Center. It protects biodiversity, supports sustainable farming, and it's fur trade, and organic too.
Ah, not to mention delicious.
Deliciously bird-friendly. If any of our listeners also like their coffee bird-friendly certified, here's how to get it. Order online at birdsandbeans.ca/warblers. Make sure to use the /warblers because that means Birds and Beans will also donate 10% of the purchase price to support this podcast. You can also use the link on your podcast player.
Sounds great. Andreas, how about another cup?
Let's do it. Do you have an example of the city that you think is really, really bird-friendly?
Frequently, Toronto is at the top of my list, and I have to give a lot of credit to people like Michael Mazur, you know, who have worked for so many years on behalf of birds, and just getting, you know, citizens, getting regular folks to think about, you know, birds and to volunteer to go on that early morning walk around downtown Toronto, right, looking for dead or injured birds, and ultimately raising awareness about the impact of a city and its buildings on birds. So like with biophilic cities, I'm frequently asked about where's the best biophilic city or what's the gold standard, and I frequently resist that a bit because it is our network really is an aspirational network. So we don't certify cities as being biophilic. You know, we want every city to push itself and to set higher standards and do more.
Are there people who have concerns about making cities bird friendly?
Not very many, but I do encounter some folks who react. It's less as kind of sharply negative view, and it's almost more about indifference, right? It's people who have maybe lived in and grown up in very dense urban environments, maybe where there weren't very many trees and there wasn't much nature around them, and there were undoubtedly birds there, but they didn't see them or hear them, or they just haven't been important. I mean, there is a certain group of folks who have what I would call the inverse of biophilia, which, you know, kind of biophobia. There's almost a fear of nature, but I don't encounter very many people like that. The obstacles, though, I think do emerge at the level of implementing, you know, policy and ordinances and codes or bylaws in the Canadian language of things. So a bird safe design requirement is certainly, when these things have been discussed in cities like San Francisco and New York and Chicago and other places, there certainly are some who object or worry or raise objections about what that will mean in terms of raising the cost of a building. Mm. I mean, we know that it's a tiny little bit of the cost of construction. And increasingly, what we're finding is with bird-safe windows, right, and projects like the Jacob Javits Convention Center in New York, that once they, you know, totally retrofitted all their windows with fitted bird-friendly windows, pretty remarkable reduction in bird mortality, but they also found that the energy consumption in the building went down.
Wow.
So there are these sort of counter benefits, right, to whatever potential increase in building costs there are. There are people who object, but you know, what I'm hearing more so these days is about the ways in which birds have been a saving grace, right? During the pandemic, especially, that so many people have told me, I'm paying more attention to the birds. And that, by the way, I've gone out and I've, you know, I've bought a bird feeder and I'm buying bird seed and I'm, you know, I'm listening to those birds and seeing those birds in a way that, you know, they didn't before the pandemic. So I think literally we've hatched a new generation of bird lovers during the pandemic. We'll see if that carries over. But I think it bodes well for the future.
That's a beautiful way of seeing it. And it's quite interesting that you mention the decals and the treatment on windows. A while back, I heard from an architect in Costa Rica who was designing something and said, well, you know, why put the bird treatment? It looks ugly. And it makes me think of this resistance when it comes to the aesthetics of the cost. On the cost And I think there's a narrow reductionist vision that is clouding the way we see it. But from the aesthetics perspective, I think it's a failure of imagination because so many other people have taken the window treatment one step farther and made awesome designs that are incredibly appealing and that are way beyond meeting the legislation when it comes to breaking reflectivity.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You can incorporate art. Yeah.
Absolutely. You can. Yeah, building can be very, very creative and different. And architects like that, right? That's what they're often after. The client may not want that necessarily, but architects, you know, want to have something in their portfolio that's different, breaking a new path. And why not? Why not make something that's beautiful and distinctive and unusual, but also bird friendly?
Mm, and I would think as the whole city strives towards the same common goal, you're going to see so many more benefits to employers. Say a new company wants to relocate and they're trying to recruit top tier talent to that new city. Are they going to want to go to a, you know, kind of a dead concrete place, or would they rather move to a city that's got a lot of life within it? You know, I think if people don't even, they might not realize they're making that decision, but they are. It's absolutely feeding into the decision to move to a new place.
Yeah, definitely.
Oh, this has all been really interesting, Tim. But now we've got to get into, you know, how do we make this change happen, especially in cities where it's not happening yet?
I don't have a perfect answer, but I do. Partly, I've been really impressed the last few months where, because of this book, I've had a lot of invitations to speak. So I guess I have some hope that there are already in place a lot of wonderful grassroots efforts and grassroots organizations, that bird groups, but others as well, right, that care about birds or care more generally about nature. So that's one answer, I guess, is to think about how it happens in a political, you know, arena, how it happens through a city council and how it happens through, you know, political activism. And so that's ultimately maybe the only way it's going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
And
so I'd love to get people involved.
Get people involved in pushing their elected representatives. Planners are generally very supportive of conservation, and many of them love birds, but there isn't much content in a typical local government plan about birds, with a few exceptions. So I think that there are opportunities for particular professions to push along and to make progress on behalf of birds, and urban planners would be one of them. Architects and urban designers would be another category that could do things that would help birds.
Mm-hmm. Lots of qualified people go into building buildings and designing cities, and if they were fully on board, and if their universities were on board and really pushing the message through. Yeah.
Yeah.
What makes me hopeful is that either a bird-friendly city or a biophilic city or any improvement that we do for habitat in cities will help many other organisms that use our cities.
Absolutely.
This is just like bird-friendly coffee. Like, I'm starting to think when you see the words bird friendly stuck next to something, that's ultimately what we're getting at. It's not just that the coffee's bird friendly, but it's creating habitat for other species as well. And it's the same thing with bird friendly cities. It's
absolutely,
it's a bigger, larger scale thing. The birds just happen to be a really accessible and relatable link
and
that we can all get.
Yeah,
lovable,
right.
Absolutely.
And on that note, same as bird-friendly coffee, Tim, how can our listeners support the change for cities to become bird-friendly?
Again, there are almost always going to be some local groups that you could connect with, and some are quite small, some are quite large. Look in your city and find organizations that are doing things and just begin to show up. You know, maybe it's a morning bird walk, or, you know, that would be one way to get started. You could download the eBird app. You could download iNaturalist and start to do things with your phone. Almost everybody has a smartphone. Set some modest goals about paying attention to birds. Begin to think also about ways that things that you could do in and around your home that would help to make it more bird friendly. I think, you know, one answer is the kind of political activism, getting engaged with some of the local groups, becoming active at that level. But then, you know, there's so many things we can just do at the level of an individual, you know, of a homeowner, planting some native species of plants that will be better for birds. Or when we're planting trees, think about those species, like in my part of the world, white oaks, that are going to be so much better for birds. And then thinking about the windows, you know, around our homes. We haven't talked at all about cats, but, you know, many of us who are bird lovers are also cat lovers. And we know that domestic and feral cats represent a huge threat to birds, even bigger than glass. And so thinking about that, taking some care, keeping our cats inside, there are a lot of things that we could do in our own lives that would be very helpful for birds.
Mm-hmm. Start by learning about birds, dive into the bird world, and make personal changes, but also learn about local groups, because I can guarantee you're going to be able to find something somewhere. Maybe you won't have a big in-person event, but you'll be able to contribute that data and get involved. And then, of course, take that to your city planners and to the people calling the shots.
And if there isn't a group, you know, in your city, maybe you live in a small city, maybe there isn't a group, you can start one.
Thank you for joining us, Tim. This was a brilliant interview.
Oh, thank you for having me.
We heard from Tim why the birdicity is critical for birds to survive in urban environments, but also for cities to be a healthier and better place for humans to inhabit. Who would want to miss bird songs or the incredible encounters with wildlife where you least expected?
Yeah, Tim talked about one of those initiatives, Biophilic Cities, which I really love, but we also wanted to chat more about what's going on in Canada. One of the efforts that's making Canadian cities friendlier for birds is the Bird Friendly City by Nature Canada. This is a certification program where nature groups, municipal officials, and other community groups and nonprofits are teaming up with Nature Canada to ensure urban environments are safe havens for birds rather than a source of threats.
The program has an advisory panel that includes Birds Canada, Quebec Oiseau, FLAP Canada, the University of Virginia, the Canadian Wildlife Service, and UBC.
So without further ado, we welcome Sarah Jordan McLaughlin from the Calgary Bird Friendly City team. Welcome, Sarah.
Thank you. Thanks so much for having me.
Sarah, tell us how you've gotten involved in this work. What's your goal?
So I came to the Bird Friendly Calgary team through the Calgary Migratory Species Response Team, which is a volunteer organization in the city that goes downtown and looks for birds and bats that have been affected by window strikes. And through there, we were offered the opportunity to become a part of the Bird Friendly Calgary team and help the city get certified. And I saw that as a really cool opportunity to be a part of something bigger, neat, and also an opportunity maybe to help support biodiversity in general in the city as well.
So you're doing this as a volunteer?
Yes. Yep. We are all volunteers on our team.
And so you're working to get the city of Calgary certified as bird friendly. How would you say that process is going? How bird friendly is it currently?
So last May, Calgary actually became one of the first four cities in Canada to be certified. So we, along with Toronto, London, and Vancouver, were certified, but we were just at the entry level, which means that we're pretty bird friendly, but we've got a lot of work to do in terms of, you know, habitat restoration and habitat connectivity. We're doing pretty good. We've got an excellent ecological network in the city, but we've also got some work to do in mitigating the threats to birds and wildlife in general.
And so what's the value of working towards making your city more bird friendly?
Well, for one, it's a badge of honor. It shows both Calgarians and people outside the city that we are thinking about the needs of something other than people in our development decisions and in our policies. And secondly, I think it provides a really great opportunity to bring seemingly unrelated topics under one umbrella, you know, to look at them as a whole and look at them from a different perspective. So, I mean, if you think about it, how often do you hear roaming cats, light pollution, coffee, native plants all put together in one category? They seem like
not very often.
Right? They seem like very separate things. But when you put them all under the same umbrella as threats to birds, suddenly you have an opportunity to look at it in a different way. I think so often policies are written in silos where it is just treating them as individual issues. And this provides an opportunity to think of different ways of dealing with an issue and also enables different groups like our volunteer organizations to be a part of the solutions and think differently rather than just leaving it all up to the city and having them take on the burden of all of this. We can together work to come up with creative solutions.
A common goal. And in the end, you're going to end up with a more natural city, a more livable place. It's going to feel good to be there and hear the bird song.
Absolutely.
Why focus on birds? Why not a wider biodiversity approach?
Well, biodiversity in general, it's a very big, big topic. And birds are something that's, it's kind of like a gateway to biodiversity. It's introducing people to biodiversity. They're something that's so visible on our landscape. They're in our backyards, they're in our parks, they're kind of everywhere. And they're something easy to connect with for people. And we can see if birds are present or if birds are not present. It creates a really easy thing for people to grab onto and understand. And then we also have the opportunity from there that birds are so interconnected with everything else in the environment. I mean, we have birds eat insects, so no insects, no birds. You know, other things eat birds, so without those birds, how do those animals survive? We have the role of seed dispersal. If we don't have birds dispersing seeds, what grows? So we have all these other interconnections we can lead to from birds, and they're just an excellent kind of a gateway to biodiversity for everybody.
How do you think the average Calgarian is feeling about this shift to bird friendly? And has there been any negative pushback?
So far, we've had a lot of support. But I think in terms of actually understanding what that means and what we're working towards has been fairly quiet so far. We haven't really affected too many different things. It's so far been a gathering of what's available in the city rather than making those changes. Now that we're starting to make those changes, we're not necessarily facing any resistance, but maybe a bit of hesitation in a couple of ways. For instance, we are working on a pamphlet for catios that we thought maybe we could hand out with adopted cats through rescue organizations in the city. And we did encounter maybe a bit of hesitation that maybe this was an anti-cat campaign, just given the traditional perspective that bird people hate cats, which is really absolutely not the case. I mean, almost all of our team has cats. But yeah, I mean, I've got two cats. I've always had cats. I've worked in animal welfare, and I don't see the two things as fighting, competing issues. They're one in the same, that we can work on helping cats stay safer and also help birds as well. So making sure we're framing things that support everybody's goals and making sure that everybody's on board has been really important to us for sure.
One of the biggest aspects of the project is selecting a city bird. I remember, I think that in the case of Vancouver, they got, the city bird got more votes than the mayor. So tell us about selecting the city's bird. How is that going? When can people vote?
Sure. So we are in the process of our bird city campaign, or official bird campaign at the moment. And we have narrowed it down to 5 species. So we reached out to several nonprofit environmental organizations in the city, as well as the Treaty 7 Nations and Métis Region 3, asking for input on what they think Calgary's bird should be. And from that, we got a list of 41 species that were voted for. And so we got it narrowed down to 5 species now. And now, yeah, so we're working with the city. The
city is actually... Tell us, which are the species? Come on, you cannot leave it like that, Sarah.
You're right, I can't leave it like that. So we do have 5 species. So we have the black-capped chickadee, black-billed magpie, northern flicker, red-breasted nuthatch, and the blue jay.
Red-breasted nuthatch for the win.
Cool. Man, some love for the magpie. They often get thrown under the bus, I feel like.
Yeah, that's cool. Actually surprised. They got the second most amount of votes in with those groups. So they're very much a contender in there for sure.
Thank you so much for everything you've shared today, Sarah. Before we wrap up, are there any specific groups or clubs that you'd want to give a shout out to so that any of our listeners in Calgary know where to look if they want to get involved?
Yeah, if anybody wants to connect directly with the Bird Friendly Calgary team, we do have a Facebook page, Bird Friendly Calgary. You can also reach us through our Gmail, which is just birdfriendlycalgary@gmail.com. Other groups in the city, if you want to directly get involved, you can speak with the Calgary Wildlife Rehabilitation Society, the Alberta Institute for Wildlife Conservation, or the Calgary Migratory Species Response Team. All of those groups are on the ground. You're interacting with wildlife firsthand, and you can kind of have that direct connection there. You could also look at places like Nature Calgary, Friends of Fish Creek, or the Weaselhead Glenmore Park Preservation Society, where there's excellent opportunities for both citizen science, education, getting out in our natural areas, and connecting with birds.
I love it. So on to you, everyone in Calgary. Get out and join and get involved.
Yes, please.
Great. Thank you so much, Sarah. It's been really wonderful having you tell us about the program.
Thank you so much for having me.
Before we leave, there are some citizen science and volunteer programs you can join. First, we are running a survey about the podcast. We want to understand who is listening and why. We also want to hear from you and what actions have you taken for birds since you discovered our podcast. And above all, what would you like to hear next? The survey is open and you can fill it out by clicking the link in the episode's description. We will be sure to share the most interesting results in the upcoming episode.
Awesome. So that's for everybody, no matter where you are. For people who are in BC, we've got a really exciting survey happening during April and May. It is the Long Billed Curlew Survey. If you want to join, contact BC Volunteer at birdscanada.org. This is the province's first population estimate for curlews since 2005. So it's a really big deal and they need all the hands they can get.
Yes, and for everyone listening, you can join the Marsh Monitoring Program and Canadian Lakes Loon Survey. Shout out to our previous episode on loons.
Yeah.
Which is also ramping up with the spring around the corner. And so in order to do that, go to Birds Canada's website and look for the Marsh Monitoring Program and Canadian Lakes Loon Survey.
Yeah, I mean, marshes are one of North America's most threatened ecosystems. So be part of that long-running effort to monitor the birds and amphibian populations.
That's it for today. Find all the links in the episode's description. The Warblers is produced by Andres Jimenez, Jody Allaire, Andrea Gress, Ruth Friendship Keller, and Kate Goldleash. This episode was edited by Greg McLaughlin and engineered by Katie Jean, with the music by Jose Mora and art by Alex Nico. Until next time, keep birding.